too late now. Good afternoon. For those of you who were in here a moment ago, you got the fire hose of the wonderful information and presentation that Jason French did. And I could not think of anyone who could partner any better on talking about youth ministry than my friend Kurt Johnson. Kurt and I both worked in the same valley for a time. Actually, when did you start with this out of back?
97.
Okay, so we worked there together for about 6 months. And and then I got out of town and headed to Charlotte, North Carolina. Kurt is a nationally published author and speaker, but his greatest bio note is that he is also a loving dad and a great husband. I know this because his wife has actually told me that. So, yeah, props to her. My wife and I have gotten to know Kurt and Rachel and been blessed to be friends with them. He also happens to serve as the leader of the youth ministry for one of the largest churches in America. Saddleback Church has been influential, and, of course, Rick Warren's name is pretty well known. And though Kurt's name may be less well known, in the world of youth ministry, Kurt is one of the go-to guys when you say, how do we step into this? How do we live in it? Because he does it week in and week out and has for a long, long time. Kurt is one of their favorite speakers at CIY at junior high events. Okay, go figure. Here is a guy with so much experience, and yet he brings this fun and bubble to everything he does. I'm so thankful to get to introduce to you, for some of you, the first time, the head of youth ministry at Saddleback Church, and that is Kurt Johnson. Would you give him a warm welcome?
Thanks, Jeff. I know that when people hear the word Saddleback, it can bring varying degrees of response, and both are a little bit awkward. Sometimes people get a little bit overly excited, like, oh, Saddleback, I love Rick Warren, the book, and he's changed some churches. And then other people kind of sit back and think, oh, Saddleback, all right. Let's see what you got, big boy. Saddleback, that's why there's no Bible verses on those handouts. I've heard it all. I've heard it all. Is this recording, by the way? I grew up really, really poor, and because of that, I love free stuff. Just free stuff. In fact, when I was in junior high, our coffee table was a free coffee table, not because somebody gave it to us, but because my dad, who must have been the original dumpster diver, my dad found it in a dumpster and brought it home and said, check this out, the Lord has given us a coffee table. And I'm thinking, if he owns a cattle on 1,000 hills, he can certainly give us a better coffee table than that. But because I love free stuff, I just assume everybody else does. I just have that assumption that everybody else must. So I've got a youth ministry packet of books. The first packet of books I'm going to give to the oldest person in the room.
Oh, my God.
The oldest person in the room who's willing to admit it.
Oh, my God.
I don't want to point anybody out. Ma'am? I'll start at 30.
That's 72,
right? Oh, we have a 72. 78. Going once, going.
Yeah.
See, there's no way. You're like, he's got you by 40
I'm
years.
A teenager.
And then how about the youngest person?
56. That's me.
56.
18.
Oh, wow. Tough to beat. All right. 18.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, in fact, I am sure of this, that I don't know how you found yourself in ministry. I'm going to make an assumption that however you found yourself in ministry is way more spiritual than how I found myself in ministry. Now, I'm not sure I can say that with confidence, knowing how Jason found himself in youth ministry. If you weren't here in the last session, his dad said, if you go to Bible college for a year, I'll buy you a car.
He loaned me a
car. What's that?
He took it back.
My dad said, if you go to Bible college, I'll find something in a dumpster for you. But I'm not. When I was a junior in Bible college. I went to Vanguard University down in down the road a ways. I was a junior in college. It was a second semester, and I knew that I was leaning towards ministry. I had felt like that's probably what God has for me. I wasn't totally sure. I'm not much of an academic, and so for me, it was about, you know, what's the easiest, the shortest distance from me to graduation day. That was kind of my strategy. And I was taking a class, the second semester of my junior year of college, taking a class entitled Camp Leadership. An entire semester of camp, of class, dedicated to the topic Camp Leadership. You know, section one, the s'more. That kind of thing. And I was about 2 weeks into this class of camp leadership, and I was walking through the courtyard of our school, and my professor saw me. To this day, I believe it was largely coincidental, at least, you know, in human terms. And he sees me, hey, Kurt, what's going on? We're talking, and in the course of the conversation, it's as if he has this little epiphany. He says, hey, Kurt, you know what? I've got an idea for you this summer. You need to run a day camp for junior hires at your church. He said, the church that I go to, that's what we do. We do this 10-week day camp for junior high students. They get dropped off in the morning. They get picked up in the evening. During the day, they go all over the place. They can sign up for 1 week, or they can sign up for all 10 weeks. Hey, Kurt, just think of traditional day camp, but crank it up a little bit and make it attractive to junior high kids. He said, I know your pastor. I know your church. You guys have a gymnasium. Your church bus, you know, runs pretty well. You can do this. You need to do 10 weeks of camp leadership this summer. Well, I'm not an academic. I'm a pragmatic to a fault, largely. And my wheels started turning. I'm street smart. I'm an opportunist. Mm-hmm. And my wheels started turning. I thought, okay, I'm in camp leadership. He wants me to lead a camp. So I said, hey, Professor Tesh, how about this? Because you're asking me to spend my entire summer in between my junior year of college and my senior year. So it's kind of like my last summer of any real freedom that I can kind of just cruise and surf and do the stuff I want. But you're asking me to lead a camp. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And I'm in your camp leadership class. Yeah. And you want me to spend 10 weeks plus all the prep work ahead of time getting ready to run it. I've never done youth ministry before. I was kind of a volunteer in my church at home. He said, yeah, that's what I want you to do. So I said, I'll make you a deal.
Here you go.
I'll make you a deal. If I can get permission, and if I go ahead and run a 10-week camp, which is doing what you're teaching us how to do, I want an A in the class. And we're 2 weeks into the semester. And I said, here's the terms. I said, I will come to class because I like to learn. I'll participate in the discussions, but I'm not going to take a test. And I'm not going to write a paper. If there's like group assignments, I'll be a group, but I'm not going to chip in. I'm going to be that guy. That's the terms. Because you're asking me to do everything that you're teaching everybody else to do, and they're going to get an A in the class and then go work at Taco Bell all summer. Huh. And he kind of pauses, says, you got a deal. Yeah. And in the courtyard, two weeks into the semester, I shook hands to get an A on the test and ended up doing a 10-week junior high camp and never looked back. That was back in 1988. And I've been primarily focused on middle school and junior high ministry ever since. I oversee junior high through college at Saddleback, which consists of 18 campuses, four of which are international: Hong Kong, Berlin, Manila, and Buenos Aires. And my role is to somehow ensure that student ministries — how this works, I don't know. This is a terrible analogy, but I'm going to use it anyway. Mm-hmm. Jesus, 100% God, 100% man. It's a mystery, right? It's a mystery. 100% of both. My role is somehow for the student ministries in Hong Kong to be 100% Hong Kong and 100% Saddleback Church. That's a Western Southern California church model. And it's a mystery. I'm not sure how it works. Somehow it's kind of working. What's interesting is that not too long ago, about 5 or 6 years ago, my school, my college, actually got into some accreditation issues. They almost lost their accreditation, which totally makes sense, right? If for the last 30 years they've been making back alley deals for grades, you kind of go, our investigation shows there's been some... I asked Jeff, I said, hey, are there any students getting credits for attending the Bible lectures? And he said, oh, no. He said, you know, at Pepperdine, they take academics. They probably wouldn't give out those units that easily. And I'm thinking, wow. Where I came from, units were like candy. You know, just, you get some credits, and you get some credits, and you get an A. So I am thrilled to just spend 10 minutes of my 45 on telling you a little bit about my background. I'm thrilled to be here. Really, really appreciate Pepperdine. We've, in the last few years, our youth ministry has begun to just kind of send a few more than we ever have in the past, a couple hours north to this great school. So I'm just honored to share with you guys a little bit today. One of the questions that I get asked a lot, and you have either been asked this question, maybe you've asked it yourself, it's been a very popular question in the last 5 years or so, and that is, what's the future of youth ministry? And it's the future of youth ministry. What's the future hold? And you've seen articles on the future of the church, the future of youth ministry. And I don't do well with that question. I just don't, as a just kind of a personal bent. And that's because I am really hesitant to be a futurist, to try to prognosticate where things are headed. I'm way more comfortable in kind of saying, what's the state of things today? What's happened? How have we got here? And what might God have for us now that, you know, I'll kind of let tomorrow take care of tomorrow. That's just an attitude that I feel pretty comfortable with. And so today, instead of saying to you, talking to you about what's the future of youth ministry, I want to talk a little bit about how it's changing. Like how things are changing right now today as we speak, which will for sure, it's going to inform the future of youth ministry. I'm just completely uncomfortable trying to predict how. I really am. I'm just uncomfortable trying to predict, therefore, this is what this means, and here's how we need to change, and here's how we need to shift. I've just seen too many predictions go askew in the past, right? So I want to talk today a little bit about where are things at now, how do they change, and I am going to share some thoughts, hopefully some sort of timeless principles that I think we can kind of double down on so that wherever youth ministry takes us, we'll be well-positioned to minister to the teenagers that God gives us. I'm never going to complain about the state of today's teenager. Today's teenager is who it is. And you and I are here for such a time as this to minister to the teenagers that God brings into our communities and into our churches. And so I think there are some kind of timeless ideas and some timeless thoughts that we can look at together. The handouts there's no blanks. If you get bored, you can head out. If you want more copies of this, I've got a few extras. I'd be happy to email them if you want to take some and maybe use this as a launching pad for discussion in your own church context. I think that might be kind of cool. Let me talk for a few minutes about some of the changes. Not too long ago, I was in a workshop, and the presenter was talking about macro versus micro trends. And macro trends are these big, long-lasting shifts. And businesses study them, and marketing studies them, and sociologists study macro trends. And a macro trend is more almost like a boulder. You know, you throw that boulder into culture, or you throw that boulder into a context, and it makes a big, deep, long-lasting impact. It's a macro trend. A micro trend is much smaller, much weaker impact, much shorter reach. So you might say, for instance, that social media is a macro trend and Facebook is a micro trend. Now, if you don't think Facebook is a micro trend, I have one word for you. MySpace. Right? So now social media seems to be here to stay. Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, those are all sort of micro trends within this macro trend. Denim, Levi's, macro trend. They've been here since our grandparents were around. Literally, I was watching American Pickers not too long ago. Again, you know, free stuff, digging through other people's stuff. That's just my love language. And they stumbled upon some like 80-year-old Levi's. That macro trend, skinny jeans. Praise the Lord, skinny jeans seem to be a micro trend, right? They might be made out of denim, but that's a segment of a larger macro trend. So what are some of the macro trends, things that have happened in culture and specifically in youth ministry that seem to have some deep implications, have sent some pretty good-sized ripples throughout the culture in our churches? Just a few. I think there's more than this, but, and we're going to kind of move fast. We'll camp out here and there. One, and I just kind of mentioned it, is the social media tsunami. Total macro trend. From pagers to iPhones, snail mail to text, face-to-face to Facebook, to Twitter, to Instagram, to Snapchat, to whatever's coming next. Watches. My son the other day bought his first iWatch, and we were looking at it, and I made this comment. I said, that thing's more powerful than my first computer. By far, it's more powerful than my first computer. I don't know if this is true or if it's just anecdotal, but they say that our cell phones contain more technology than it took to land astronauts on the moon. Wow. And we carry that in our pocket. And our teenagers are connected to it how often a day, Jason? 7 to 10 hours?
10 for Z, 7.5 for X.
And most of it's not just because of Netflix and all that, but a whole bunch of it is checking their status. How many likes? Who can I talk to? What reaction? What's going on? FOMO, fear of missing out. Used to just be like a marketing and an investing kind of term, and now it is, they don't know that term, but that our teenagers' social media has created an entire generation of FOMO students. They don't want to be left out. They can't, and they're checking it all the time. That's got some implications for you and I. It's got some implications. Again, I'm not sure exactly what that, therefore, this is what the future of youth ministry looks like. I'm just not comfortable going there. People smarter than myself have written books about it. And a bunch of people way smarter than myself wrote books about it 10 years ago, and about half of those were totally off base. So, there you go. Another macro trend. This is not going to catch anybody off guard, but increasingly post-Christian worldview. I read something the day before yesterday, I think, on Generation Z, and people were debating it because this author said that Generation Z will be the first post-Christian generation, which when you look at the numbers of how many Americans still claim to be Christians, the stats don't show us that it's truly post-Christian. It's definitely further along that trajectory than we ever have been. And because it's an increasingly post-Christian worldview, there's less students with a built-in Christian worldview, obviously. The Christian students that we do have, I call them less confident and convinced. They're less convinced and they're less confident being vocal about their faith. And that is what it is. We need to think through some of that stuff. Moralistic therapeutic deism, if you've heard of that phrase, most of you have. Basically, that's a relatively new phrase that just describes a philosophy or a worldview that's been around forever. It's just on the increase. And it's more dangerous, probably, than it ever has been because it's more standard, it's more accepted. And that's the very typical Christian teenager in America that says, yeah, I like God, I'm a good kid, I make good choices, I don't do anything wrong, so me and God are good. And I like church, and I go to church. So, you know, it's maybe another way to, it's the old school God and country kind of mentality, right? We're good people. We like God. We're pro Him. And there are some long-lasting and far-reaching ramifications about how that affects how we teach, what we teach, how they hear it, the vocabulary that we use, and things like that. Another macro trend doesn't seem to be changing anytime soon is increased faith fade after high school. Most experts call it faith abandonment. I choose not to use that word. And simply because it's not often or it's rarely that intentional or that extreme. Most of our students don't you know, get home from high school graduation, take off their cap and gown, and say, finally, forget all that church stuff. Right? They don't abandon it like you abandon ship. But what happens is when real life kicks in and they move away to college for the first time or they enter the workforce for the first time, it's as if youth group and church is in the rearview mirror, and it just kind of slowly fades into the background. And oftentimes, if you'll talk to 25, 30-year-olds who are no longer really active in church, they won't identify, well, this was the moment I just chucked it all in. Most of them won't do that. Now, some will, and some will do that honestly, and there was a moment that something happened. Others will invent moments, invent reasons to justify kind of that fade, but most of the time it's just this faith fade. Now, what's interesting about this faith fade is, like a lot of things, is we don't know for sure if this is a new phenomenon, right? We really don't know if it's new or if we're just more aware of it than we ever have been. And we see that all the time. When I was a teenager, all of a sudden, missing children, their faces started showing up on milk cartons. It was like this awesome campaign, ingenious, because everybody bought milk cartons, and they would put the faces of missing children. And it seemed as if overnight, the world became a more dangerous place. Look at how many kids are missing. Look how many children are kidnapped. Well, was there suddenly a spike in kidnappings, or were we just suddenly more aware of the world that we lived in? Probably the fact that we were just suddenly a little bit more aware of it. I think if we were to go through this room and raise our hands, a whole bunch of us, we had a season of faith fade sometime in our later adolescent years, where we questioned, we wandered, we stretched our wings, we tested our freedoms, we sowed our oats, however you want to phrase that. I'm not sure if it's a brand new phenomenon. What I am sure of this is that we're paying more attention than we ever have. And we're held accountable for what we know. We have to steward well what we know, right? And so that is something that we need to be paying close attention to. One of the things that's interesting about faith fade is it's forcing us to rethink our approaches to youth ministry. And that's a good thing. Faith fade's not a good thing, but being forced to rethink some of our approaches to youth ministry, in what ways have we contributed to it? Now, on one side of the pendulum's swaying way over here, and for a while there, it was, the way we do youth ministry is to blame. It's to blame. Well, if all you're going to do all day is play Chubby Bunny, no wonder kids walk away from faith. Which is such a false argument, right? Because I've never met a church that all they do is play Chubby Bunny. That church doesn't exist as far as I know. That all they do is play... Well, of course, if all you do is play Chubby Bunny... But I've not met... But everything, every time we hit a panic button as a culture, we've got to have a scapegoat. It's just the way we're wired as a culture. You've got to have a scapegoat. So it's real easy to make the way we do youth ministry the scapegoat for why kids don't hold on to faith once they leave youth ministry. Now, I don't think that's the case. I think we have to be honest enough to say, in what ways might we be contributing? What role do we have in that? What's our responsibility? And regardless of how big of a role we play, what our responsibility is, okay, if faith fade is an issue, what might we do to curb it? What might we do to curb it? And we're going to talk about that in the second half of our time together. Because at the end of the day, that might be the biggest issue, right? I mean, at the end of the day, I think the issue most of us are concerned about is, how do we keep kids connected to faith and to church? How do we help that happen? Another macro trend, extended adolescence. We've seen that. Most experts say it stretches in the mid to late 20s. Living at home longer, marrying later, slower to settle into career. Believe it or not, this might be the least macro trend of them all, because a lot of that has to do with economics. You know, the fact that housing has gone like this, through no fault of their own, a lot of kids have to live at home longer. It doesn't automatically mean they're not mature, right? Well, if you're going to live at home,
They live in the mom and dad have a basement. I might as well live in the basement. And hey, since I'm in the basement, I might as well play Xbox. And before you know it, we got about 28-year-olds living at home playing Xbox in the basement. And those things kind of pile on each other. And suddenly we think, well, maybe there are some issues here. But they're not, you know, one doesn't automatically assume the next. Do me a favor and put a little asterisk next to this one. Because to me, this one's really exciting and scary and unique. And that is service projects as missions. Service projects and missions as evangelism. Back in the day, we reserved service projects and missions trips for our core students. Fill out an application. Share your testimony. We cannot take you across the border to Mexico to, you know, skip rope with three-year-old orphan kids unless you can articulate your faith in Christ. And we certainly can't take you to Costa Rica to help lead a youth service if you're not a follower of Jesus. And I'm not sure I have a ton of argument with that. What's shifted is one of the things that this generation, millennials, are really into is causes. They want to make a difference in the world. And we poo-poo it, you know, oh, hashtag activism, you're a bunch of slacktivists, you know. But that's the result of good intentions. It's good hearts. It's kids who look at the world around them, and they may not look at it through a faith lens, but they just recognize there's some stuff about life that doesn't make sense, and I can do something about it. And a great opportunity exists now for churches to leverage, because who's really good at missions and making a difference in the world? And service opportunities? The church, right? I mean, we're better at it than anybody in history. We're way better at it than the Red Cross. We're way better at it than the Peace Corps. The church, collectively, is the world's greatest in the history of mankind mobilizer of difference makers. And so now you and I can go, you know, what's the best way to reach those kids at that high school? Is the best way to reach them a Friday night concert where we give away pizza? It might be for some of them. Or is the best way to reach them to invite them to come with us to the inner city to paint curbs, fire curbs, or to do some after-school tutoring down the road? What's all of a sudden now that's an evangelistic opportunity that we can bring kids in. And boy, I'll tell you what, if you want the right to talk to somebody about Jesus, you've kind of got that right when you're on a bus together and you've been working together for the last couple days, helping some people out and serving your community. It's a great opportunity. So that's kind of an interesting twist. It's a little bit scary, isn't it? It's a little bit scary because a lot of our church traditions, and I come from a church that we have a very specific discipleship process. We grease that machine and grease that machine, and we would say our discipleship process is why our church is successful and why it's grown is because this is how we do church and this is what we aim for and this is it. And when you start going, well, wait a second, but what if somebody wants to enter all the way over here? Mm-hmm. Well, wait a second, that's reserved for our congregation. That's, you know, our chart says, and you know, well, maybe there's a new way, and it kind of upsets the apple cart. But every time the apple cart gets upset, that's an opportunity for us to say, God, what are you up to? Are you doing something different? It's worth thinking about. And then the no-brainer, the big one, the one that, you know, we just can't ignore is the sexuality shift. I'm not sure I've seen anything change culturally and in our youth ministries in the last decade. Maybe in the last, it's been like this, you know, it's like compound interest. It's been kind of going like this in the last couple of years. It's just cranked up is the sexuality shift and the views towards that amongst teenagers, amongst the body of Christ. Is there anything more controversial currently, other than worship probably, is there anything more controversial you know, than how do we minister to the LGBT community? How are they treated when they come onto our campus? Where can they serve? Can they serve? What if they want to do that? Well, right? Those conversations, if you've not had those conversations, you're way, way late to the game. Mm-hmm. And my hunch is if you've not had those conversations, you've wanted to. And there's been side conversations, right? Mm-hmm. because we're trying to figure this thing out. A couple thoughts when it comes to our teenagers. Your theology probably hasn't changed that much on this issue. Your theology probably hasn't changed, and I'm certainly not suggesting that it should. Mine hasn't. Our church's theology has not changed at all. Teenagers' theology has changed. Culture's theology has completely shifted on this topic. What I would say is this. Culture is your teenager's theology on this. Culture is your church's theology on almost every issue. Because they are inundated, they're swimming in it, they're neck deep in it all day, every day, and it's getting preached at them all day, every day. And people say, well, there's no agenda. There's everybody has a worldview. And anybody that has a microphone, just like you and I do, they get that worldview, they message that worldview. And our teenagers hear a theology and a worldview all the time. And they hear the counter pretty rarely, right? And let's just pretend you've got 52 Wednesday nights a year with your teenagers. 52. And let's just pretend, just for sake of math, because I'm not real good at math, let's just pretend it's an hour a week. You got 52 weeks a year with your teenagers. Now you start charting out, what do we want to teach? What's important? What are our staples? What's our denomination's fundamental things that we want to cover and make sure, what's a Christian, what are some felt needs? And pretty soon you go, wow, at 52, we've got about two lessons dedicated towards a biblical view of sexuality. Well, and kids come to church about half the time, so every one of our kids is going to miss one of those 2 weeks on a biblical view of sexuality. And so all of a sudden, our microphone is about an hour a year compared to relentless from culture. And so we need to recognize that. Is it alarming? I think it's a little bit alarming. It really is. But so is it's alarming that, all kinds of other things seem to be getting lost in the noise of our culture. This is just something at Saddleback, something that we've decided when it comes to especially student ministries. But what we've decided, we ring this bell all the time, it's our mantra, is that we want church to be the safest place to talk about anything, especially something as important as sexuality. So for me, the more students with questions, the better. The more kids with, what about this? The better. The more students who say, hey, can I talk because I'm having some feelings? The better. It's not comfortable. Pushes us out of our safety zone. But because if kids aren't talking about this at church, where else are they talking about it in a healthy way? Well, it's sex education class. Healthy way. Where else are they talking about it in a healthy way? Well, in the locker room. Well, okay. Well, we want church to be the safest place. So for us, our language is freak out on the inside, stay calm on the outside. That's what we tell our leaders. Freak out on the inside, stay calm. I'm so glad you shared that. Man, that must have been really scary for you to track me down and express that you're feeling that way. Okay, I'd love to talk to you more about that. Just church should be the safest place to talk about anything. And, we got all kinds of mantras in our youth ministry that help us. But one is run towards the awkward. We have a tendency, most of us, to kind of run away from the awkward. We want to lean in because the good stuff, the fruit, it's the good stuff, life change happens in the awkward. And so we want to lean in the awkward and talk about stuff, because if it's not happening at church, where is it? Wow, okay. 10 minutes to cover the next 5 pages. All right. Woo! That's why I gave these to you guys all filled out, so you can talk about this. So, what can we do kind of moving forward? What should we do in light of this? This is just my language, but I would say consider providing a magnetic youth ministry that is both attractional and sticky. I use those words together on purpose because we've bought a lie, a lot of us, that we think attractional and missional or sticky are mutually exclusive. And I just refuse to believe that that's the case. You don't have to be in a camp. You don't have to be, well, we're an attractional church, which, by the way, that's not even a real word. And neither is missional. You type them in and it gets underlined every time. Attractional is not a word, but we hate it. We hate it. It's the devil's word. Missional is not a word, but we love that. Man, oh, missional, we love that. That's a Jesus-y word. And therefore you got shoes. And an attractional youth ministry is shallow and weak and just gives stuff away. And there's articles against attractional ministry. And I've just never met again a youth ministry that says, oh yeah, we are an attract. That's not a model of ministry that anybody ascribes to that I know of. It might be part of their process. And I would also say missional or sticky is not a model. It's something that it's part of the process. It might be our ultimate goal. And I think you get one and the other better when they kind of work together. And I think a magnet's a kind of a good picture. Because a magnet both is an irresistible draw and has a stickiness to it. And I think a youth ministry can be magnetic. It can be irresistibly attractive, and it can result in sticky faith and students who hold on and walk and live out a missional life. Some thoughts. This is not meant to be prescriptive. It's just some thoughts that might help you create. And I think if you were to make sure any of these were in place, you're well on your way. Has Jesus as its center. One of the things that we've been saying in our youth ministry is less God, more Jesus. Less God, more Jesus. I had two aha moments. And one of them, the big one, was we have a summer internship program, and most of our summer interns come through our own ministry. They're homegrown kids. Our year-long interns come from all over the country. Our summer interns are homegrown. And we have to do a theological interview with them. And part of my interview was always, okay, we're at camp. And I'm an 8th grade or 9th grade student. I track you down after the session and I say, hey, I liked what the camp speaker had to say. I raise my hand, but I don't really know. He didn't explain it. You're an adult leader. Lead me to Christ. And you've got 2 minutes. Lead me to Christ in 2 minutes, because that's how it's going to be. Because they want to be a Christian, but they also don't want to be at the end of the line for shave ice. So that's the two things. those two realities are very, very, very true. Very true. And please don't make them choose. Give them both. And time after time after time after time, our own kids who grew up, and this pains me to say it, grew up under my leadership and my youth ministry, couldn't do it. And they'd err on one of two things. Tons of God talk. Well, that's a good question. Lead them to, oh boy. I tell them that God loves them and you know, just run in the arms of God. What? Come again? Just run it. Run in the. It's okay. Okay, I'm in God's arms now. What? That's a tough one. I didn't think you were going to hit me with a follow-up question. Or they could nail every single talking point memorized, and as soon as you throw a curveball in there, they couldn't deal with it. Moralistic therapy of deism. I go to church. I like God. Yeah, but tell me about Jesus Christ. Articulate the gospel. Why are we lost and desperately in need of a savior? Oh, well, whew, I have no idea. So one of our big, big rally cries in our student ministries right now is when we can, replace God talk with Jesus talk. Because everybody's pro-God. Everybody's pro-God. But you start talking about Jesus, and the story begins to change. You know, there are some pretty quick lines in the sand when you start talking about Jesus that don't exist initially when you just have kind of a generic God talk. So for us, we want to make sure Jesus is at center. Has teenagers as its specialty. One of the ways faith becomes sticky, one of the ways youth ministry is attractive to students is when it's led by men and women who really, really understand teenagers. Not only do they understand them, but they like them. They like them. You see, everybody loves teenagers. Everybody in your church loves teenagers. They have to. They're Christians. I love those crazy. Love them in the name of the Lord. You know, God bless you guys for spending time with them. Woo! You know, write your check to buy some pizza. Right? In fact, they love teenagers so much they build them big youth buildings on the complete farthest end of campus. So they never, ever have to rub shoulders with those crazy. But how many adults like teenagers? They like them. They like this weird developmental process that teenagers find themselves in. When you can build a youth ministry full of men and women who understand and like teenagers, and it's full of teenage specialists, oh man, you don't need lights, camera, action. Wayne Rice, who's the grandfather of junior high ministry, one of the founders of Youth Specialties, has said for years that teenagers will gravitate, this is good news for some of us, I was going to point to you, us as well, teenagers will gravitate to the oldest person in the room who takes them seriously. Wow. Well, yeah, you know, but we've got a youth group full of college-age volunteers and a killer band. Oh, okay. It's what Jason talked about. They like the gray hairs. They're attracted to older people who like them and take them seriously. Where else in a teenager's life, with any level of genuine concern, does a teenager hear these words? What do you think? What do you think about that? Well, not very many places when we can provide that. All right, there's a great little exercise there. Sometime maybe this week, fill in those blanks about your teenage world. Remember what it was like to be a teenager. That's always painfully awesome. A third idea. Okay, here we go. Has health as its goal. I think a healthy youth ministry. I don't want to describe what health is. You can describe that in your context and your theology and your setting. But you don't stumble upon health. You stumble upon unhealth, right? If I don't think about brushing my teeth get unhealthy. If I don't think about what I'm eating, I eat unhealthy food. If you don't think about a healthy youth ministry, the odds are you're going to kind of find yourself in an unhealthy situation where all of a sudden we do play too much chubby bunny. Maybe in the world of reaching out to teenagers, you might stumble upon a situation where, you know, we do talk about verse-by-verse Bible study too much for today's group of kids that God's bringing into our doors. A healthy youth ministry recognizes there's a time and a place for all of the above because of the audience that we're serving, right? Because of the audience that we're serving. And the audience that we're serving is different than the audience that our senior pastors are serving. And it's not untheological, it's not unspiritual to recognize that. The Bible says in Proverbs, know well the condition of your flock. Know well the condition of your flock. And some age groups, some flocks, teenagers specifically, need a different approach. So health as its goal, fun as its reputation, that's super controversial, I get it. I just want to redefine fun, and you can see how I define fun there. Here's all I know. Unchurched teenagers, and even a lot of church teenagers, do you want to go to church? I don't know. Is it going to be fun? Or a variation of, it's not going to be boring, is it? Same thing. It's not going to suck, is it? It's the same thing, right? Well, it's not old-fashioned, is it? What they're asking is it going to be any, is it going to be any fun? Is it worth my time? Am I going to enjoy it? And I don't think you have to be funny and crazy. I think there are some things that you can put in place that make it enjoyable. For us, it's real, relevant, relational, and relaxed. I think if youth group is real, relevant, relational, and relaxed, it's fun. And teenagers like to have fun. And so it's not a curse word. Consider building a youth ministry that has relationships as its priority. Some tips there on what relational youth ministry looks like. Has parents as its partners. Has stickiness as its measure. I do think it's very fair. When we evaluate our youth ministry over a little bit of a trajectory, I think it's really fair and healthy to go, of these 50 students that were seniors over the last 3 years, so the last 3 years worth of seniors, we had about 50 of them. Where are they now? How are they doing? Oh, this one's involved in crew at his college, and this one's is volunteering as a worship leader at their church, and this one didn't go to school, but they're working as a mechanic, and man, they're involved in our call. Okay, this one's wandered, this one's lost. I think it's okay to go, do we feel good with the long-term fruit of our labor? is what we're doing causing faith to stick in the lives of these? That's my ultimate goal. My ultimate goal is that teenagers would walk out of Saddleback Student Ministries in love with Jesus, wanting to be kingdom workers, wanting to be Christ-centered difference makers in their world, and that 2, 3, 4, 5, 8 years later, may not be perfect, but they're kind of doing that. And they're committed to the cause, and they're in love with the Father, and they're still in the fight. I'm not that concerned about how many times I got knocked down along the way. Have they determined to just stay in the fight, to answer the bell one more time? That's how I think you measure a healthy youth ministry. Why do I think attractional youth ministry is okay? Because I think there's an aspect of numbers game going on. If I want to see 50 kids walk across the finish line at graduation, one of the best ways to see 50 kids walk across the line as Christ-centered difference makers is to get 200 on the front end. It's one of the ways. I'm going to expose 200 kids to the good news of Jesus. And maybe 50 of them, maybe more than 50 of them. But if I'm only exposing 50, and I'm only starting small all the time, that's all I want, it's going to be harder. And I think we see some of that modeled in even in the ministry of Christ. And finally, has empowerment as its method. Just a final thought, your ministry will only grow to the extent that you're willing to give it away and empower other people to take the ball and run with it. Those are all of my thoughts. I went 2 minutes over. Jeff walked back in. I'll stick around. I'm sure you guys got other workshops to go to, but I'll stick around. Would love to talk. My email address is Kurt, just K-U-R-T, @saddleback.com. Kurt@saddleback.com. I'd love to answer any questions, stay in touch, do anything we can to serve you guys well. Thanks.
Great. Thank you, Kurt. Let's go.